Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is Mike Johnson. MJ, how are you today, sir?
I am better than that laundry list of injured guys. I mean, it's crazy to think, and it's not just the Leafs, but all around the league, how many players are hurt before we even get going? Like, it's so many guys have been banged up in camp or heading into camp, and you would have think that this would be the moment when they'd be healthiest, and that's certainly not the case around the league, and certainly not with Toronto.
Johnny, I'm perplexed here because I was just telling, I'm not sure if you heard, but I was just telling these guys, and you can attest to this too, like, this is the time of year where you just had a summer, you just had ample opportunity to build your body up, get the rest that you need, get the treatment you need. This is when your body should be feeling the best it's ever going to feel during a season. And we got guys with foot issues, shoulders, groins, hips. And it's not just the Leafs. Like, it's really bad in Leafland, but it's all around the league. Like, I know we talked about the schedule being condensed the last few seasons, and that's got to factor into it. Like, is some of this stuff avoidable, or is this just inevitable? Like, this is the way the game's going now.
I don't think it's inevitable. I think it maybe could be the cumulative effects of the last few years of it being so disjointed and short summers and weird training and your body never quite heals. And but, you know, for most teams, they've had 3 months off. Right? Yeah. Like, I know the year went a couple weeks later, but they still have had 3 months off. That's plenty of time to rest, recover, have surgeries, and rehabilitate yourself. And like, there's some stuff, you know, whether it's a shoulder injury or you break your foot or something, but like all the groins and the abdominal pulls and the hips and like that's kind of what you train all summer for. So those don't happen to you in the first week. And I don't think the camps are any harder today than they have been in years past. In fact, many ways they're easier because coaches understand injuries and rest and how hard to push guys. So it is confusing to me why so many guys, it seems like, are just a little nicked up at this time of the year.
Yeah, no doubt about it, MJ. I mean, we were talking about, you know, the Leafs defense core and obviously some injuries playing a part in, you know, Alex Kerfoot and Kalle Järnkrok having to go back and play some D as forwards the other night. We saw Mitch Marner getting some reps in on the blue line for Sheldon Keefe. What do you make of this idea of forwards playing D, Marner specifically, but just in general? I mean, it's not like it hasn't happened before. We talked about Sergei Fedorov putting in some time for Scotty Bowman on the blue line in Detroit all those years ago. There's some Leafs in history, like Wendell Clark and Gary Lehman, who played both positions. How do you see it? Do you think we might see it more as we move toward a more positionless type of league?
Well, so it's interesting, and I'm not taking any credit for this, but somebody asked me this summer about if I could make one rule change, what would I do? If I was a coach, what would I do? I would play four forwards more often, not just on the power play, but at 5-on-5 as well. And I think it makes a lot of sense, because other than struggling off the rush, which I think forwards kind of would do, right? Like, they're just not going to be as good at, you know, pivoting, skating, closing gaps. But as far as playing in their own end, I mean, if you're a forward, if Frankie's a defenseman, I'm the winger, if I'm down low, like, we're essentially doing the same job, and I'm used to being down there. There's nothing confusing about it. It's all the same, whether I'm the defense or whether I'm a forward, generally speaking, on the system that teams play. So I do like the idea of it. If you're trailing by two and there's 7 minutes left, you don't want to pull your goalie yet, but you want a more offensive thrust, get a forward out there. I think it's the numbers and the data has proven that on power plays with four forwards, they generate way more chances than with three. And I think it would stand to reason that it would be the same on 5-on-5. Now, you might give up a little bit more, but I don't think it's that risky. The one unit that I think about that does it all the time is Boston, because they really trust David Krejci to play defense.
Right.
Krejci often plays as the second defenseman at 5-on, not often, but occasionally at 5-on-5, and it works out just fine, other than off the rush. But I think it's something we're headed towards. And like the other day when Järnkrok and Kerfoot were doing it, the guys would love it, right? Like, they would love the freedom of playing defense. And if you screw up, it's not a big deal because you're not supposed to be good at it.
Exactly.
But then if you actually like happen to pivot and take someone out of the blue line or turn on, you know, squeeze someone off, you're like, yeah, I got this. This is no problem. So I know the guys would have had fun the other night. And I think it's something we will see more of, because both in the offensive and defensive zone, the idea of positionless hockey where defensemen are kind of roaming around, forwards love to operate up by the offensive blue line in the defensive zone, you know, if you're on a man-to-man system, then you kind of just play your guy wherever he goes, and it's not that confusing in your own end. It might be hard off the rush, but not in your own end.
MJ, were you one of those forwards where every once in a while you got stuck playing defense in practice or something like that, and you threaded a nice pass, or you took a nice point shot, and you turned to all the defensemen and you said, "This ain't that hard. What are you guys always complaining about?"
Yes, you got me pegged. I absolutely was. And
I hate those guys because they make one good pass. They make one good breakout pass, and they skate by all the defensemen laughing, saying, "What are you guys always complaining about? Get me the puck."
Yeah, that's it. I'd be moonwalking down the ice like, "Guys, what is the big deal?" No, like one of my favorite memories in hockey, it was a regular season game, and I was playing in Arizona, and Rick Bowness, current coach of the Jets, was the assistant, and he ran the defense. And we ran into, so we had two D in the penalty box, a D who was hurt, and a fight. Like, we were down to like two defensemen to kill a penalty. And so he went, you know, reached out the bench, say, "Johnny, get down here." I was the seventh defenseman. I loved it. I went out there to kill a penalty as a defenseman. It was hilarious.
It gets the bench going too. The
boys guys
love
are loving it. And then, like, of course, I just Olay every puck that's coming at me. I'm like, I'm not going to block them like the defensemen do in front of the net. I'm like, I'll get the guy out of the way. I'll let the goalie save it. But yeah, the guys loved it. But I'll never forget when he called me to play defense for like 6 minutes. And I thought it was fantastic. So it does something, get a little juice going, as it would have the other night for the guys in the exhibition game.
And you had the tweet about allowing other players who aren't dressed to step in for injured players, which I liked. I wonder if you got any feedback on that.
Yeah, I mean, I just, when you saw the couple of guys go down, not because it's Toronto, but any team, the idea that you have other bodies around, the games mean nothing, the opponent wouldn't protest you putting in a proper positional player, and you don't want to overtax guys playing 25, 28, 29 minutes in an exhibition game, and you don't want guys to have to play positions that aren't their own because, one, it's not good to see if those guys are any good, and two, maybe there's a bit of a chance of an injury because they get themselves in an awkward spot, so why not? If you have the bodies in the building and it's an injury, not a fight or a bad hit, but it's an injury in the first or second, not the third, because then you just finish up the game, then you give the team a chance to bring someone down and just bring a defenseman in. And it doesn't have to be a veteran guy. It can be a young guy. They'd be excited to play, happy to get in the lineup. It makes a lot of sense. I didn't see too much downside to it. And I did get a few texts back from people who worked in front offices basically saying, "Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Not sure if it will happen, but it makes a lot of sense." So I would think if the GMs wanted to bring it up, and it's just a little nuanced thing, wouldn't happen often at the GM meetings, it probably would be pretty well supported because it makes a lot of sense because the exhibition games are only about evaluation and development and got nothing to do with winning.
Hey, MJ, we saw, you know, if we're not talking about forwards playing defense, we're talking about left-handed defensemen having to try out the right side, which is the eternal topic, it seems, in Leafland. Although we didn't talk about it that much last year. And we're seeing now Morgan Rielly, you know, volunteering to take some reps on the right-hand side of the pairing with Jake Muzzin or whoever it may be, because we got a lot of left-handed shots out there. I mean, when you're watching ringside, you know, in all the games you do, you know, what's your observation of that you know, situation for left-handed defensemen playing on the right side, and what do you think it might do for or against Rielly?
So there's the obvious times where, like, the puck comes around the boards and he's got to, like, toe-pick it down the boards because he can't pull it on his backhand because, it's, you know, he's on the wrong side. Or, you know, he gets coming out the wrong side of the net and he can't, you know, make a hard clearing play because he's on his backhand. Those are the obvious ones. And I think defensemen that do it often enough figure out ways to work around that. TJ Brody does a really good job of it. But I think for the guys trying to make the adjustment later in their career, like a Morgan Rielly who hasn't done it very often, not because he can't, just because he hasn't, it's more the instinctive awareness that you have as a defenseman, where people are, where you want them to go, when are you in a good spot, when you're in a bad spot, and all that stuff is just, you're not thinking. You just know. Like, that's okay. I want him there. He's good there. I can take. When you get to the other side, it's not so obvious because you don't know. You just haven't had the experience of, okay, can I close that quickly? What's my strength like on the pivot? All those things that Frankie would, you know, take for granted on his strong side, it's not instinctively ingrained over 20 years on your offside if you've not done it. That's where I think the bigger challenge is, not necessarily Can I pull a puck off the wall on my backhand and get to the middle of the ice? Or can I take one-timers? Those are obvious. It's the stuff that is the habits that are built in over decades. Those are the ones that are tougher to kind of get around.
And that's exactly it, Johnny. It's a little bit of the subtleties as far as even your sight lines go, right? Like when you play your strong side, and it's probably the same on the wing too, you're always facing up ice. You're always facing the play, so you don't really have to worry as much. When you're playing your offside, you're always constantly having to check way more, and you find your body's not really facing up ice. And yeah, there's a lot of advantages to it, but it just and you hit it the nail on the head. Like it's way more thinking involved. It's not as instinctual. And for a guy like Morgan Rielly, that's the kind of guy for me. I just want him, like, I want him riverboat gambling, offensive defenseman, go do your thing, and I want to insulate him with defense around him, because I feel like over the years, Morgan has had to take on such a, I guess, a leadership role, but he's had to carry so much of the brunt of the load on this back end. I would just love for once to see this guy absolutely unleashed with a steady right-handed partner who can deal with whatever comes back the other way, which I actually don't even think would be that bad, because he would be so involved offensively, you would have the puck most of the shift.
Yeah, well, you know, and kudos to him to kind of say, well, listen, I'll give it a whirl. You know, I'll try it and see how it goes, because he recognizes the need on the team and he's well established. He doesn't have to offer up that kind of versatility, but he's going to give it a try. And I think whether he plays on a strong side or his offside, I think the idea of having a very good defensive defenseman to let Mo go do what he does best, right? Like, Morgan Rielly's not, you know, a brilliant defensive defenseman. He's good. He's fine, but he's not great. What he is great at, world-class at, is playing with the puck and getting up the ice and being creative and joining the rush and producing offense. And, you know, to get the most out of that side of him, if you can put him with a solid defensive play-driving guy that lets him do his thing, that would be the optimal fit. And I think that's what they're searching for. And whether that guy is Liljegren or Brody or Muzz or Sandin, whoever it ends up being, they're trying to find that balance that lets him be the best version of himself.
MJ, when you look at that Leafs blue line, when it's all healthy, I mean, there's probably some load management with Muzzin and Gio over the course of a year, but what would you assess that blue line to be? How good is it?
It's excellent in its depth. Like they're not maybe the superstar driven, because, you know, Morgan Rielly, if he's the number one guy, he's not as good as Victor Hedman or Cale Makar. But when your third pair is Mark Giordano and Timothy Liljegren, like, that's a really good third pair. If Jake Muzzin's healthy, Muzzin and whoever it is, you know, whether it's Sandin or whether it's Hall or Brody, whatever, like, that can be a really good defense pairing and be rock solid. And then you have Morgan Rielly up top doing what he does, and he's been, you know, a top scoring defenseman for years. It's a top 10 defense in the league on aggregate, not at the top end, not. They don't have a top 10 defenseman probably on the unit, but collectively they can be really, you know, more than serviceable, do exactly what Toronto needs them to do, given the way Toronto's set up front, if they're healthy. And that's a big if, because, you know, Jake Muzzin, when he's right, he's so good. And whoever he plays with, they put up great results. Shot shares, expected goals, actual goals, all that stuff. If he's not, it's an entirely different situation, because Justin Hall is not doing that on his own, right? He needs Muzzin's support to be part of that good pairing. That's where you're not holding your breath, but there's a question mark, because if he can't stay healthy, things start to look a little bit different.
The one aspect of that decor, MJ, I'm interested in your thoughts on, is sort of the sandpaper side to it, right? Because, you know, a couple years ago, you had Zach Bogosian. Last year, you had Ilya Lyubushkin throwing weight around. And this year, I think Kyle Dubas saw the guy who would provide that to be Jordy Benn, who's now out 3 weeks and 35 years old. Maybe he'll be back and be fine, but maybe he won't be. You know, how much are they relying on Benn to provide that? And how concerned would you be that, you know, a lot of that is going to fall on one guy who's 35 years old?
Well, did you anticipate Jordy Benn playing, like, fairly regularly on this defensive group?
Well, 40 games, just, maybe.
Yeah.
How many?
Well, then who else is going to do that job?
Maybe 40 games, Johnny. Maybe 40 games.
Yeah.
Well, I would not have predicted that. I would have thought they have, you know, if everyone's healthy, it's Riley and it's Brody and it's Hall and it's Muzzin and it's Giordano and it's Liljegren and Sandin. They're seven. Well, Jordy Ben's at best an eight. Like, I don't think he's playing ahead of any of those other guys. I don't.
No. That's so, taking into account that you would probably have injuries throughout the season.
Yeah, so you're anticipating a ton of injuries.
Muzzin's not playing 82. I mean, there's no way.
No, but if Muzzin's not playing, Sandin is. Like, they have seven guys ahead of him, is what I'm saying. So, you know, he's kind of a break in case of emergency. I don't think they think of him that way. That doesn't change, you know, I think, would they prefer more physical players? I guess, yeah, you want guys with skill who can also play physically. But, you know, you think about, even Colorado, who just won the Stanley Cup, you know, their top four, you know, they got Makar and they got Taves and they got Girard. Like, Josh Manson's not a super physical guy anymore. Neither is Eric Johnson. They're big, but they're not like crazy physical. Not any different than, you know, Muzzin or Giordano could be. It'd be great. You'd love it if you could have it, but I think they'd rather have puck moving, good skating, guys who can close plays off. And then, you know, if they can be a little extra physical, that's a bonus, but they'd rather have guys making plays with pucks than just chasing it, being physical.
Johnny, if you're Rasmus Sandin and you just signed your contract and you got the money that Liljegren got and you're flying into Toronto now and you got to get acclimated and get ready, I mean, what's your first order of business to get involved and get acclimated and get up to speed with this group?
So I guess was he flying today? Yesterday?
I believe it's today.
Today, so he's flying in. So coming this way, time change is not quite as hard. I think that's the hardest thing. He's going to want to jump right into practice. Like, literally, I guess, get through his physical probably today, maybe tomorrow morning, get on the ice in some capacity. So I think just getting your body clock wired to Toronto time, so that you can kind of get out there right away. And then I don't think it's more than a day or two, and he's up and running with the main group. And then
he doesn't have that much time.
No, but listen, I went over and played in Europe. I flew on a Wednesday night, got there Thursday, played Friday in a game.
Classic Europe, man. They don't waste any time.
No,
if you're
a
Canadian, Johnny, if you're a Canadian and you're going to play in Europe, they think you are a mix of Gretzky and Bobby Orr combined into one, and you are the savior to the organization, and they need you to play yesterday.
Yeah. When I went out, the overnight trip, I was going to Sweden. We already had a stacked team with Sheldon Soure and Danilo Chara and Martin Gerber and all these great NHLers anyways. But, yeah, so it can be done. But I think that his first order of business, get on the ice. Like, make sure you're healthy. Make sure your body's right, your mind's right. You're not kind of, like, foggy because of the time change in the last couple of days. Get on the ice and get into it. Because I think for him, he's got to hit the ground running because he's not just trying to, like, catch up. He's kind of trying to catch up and surpass guys around him, right? He wants to play in the top four. And there are spots in the top four that maybe he could play in right now. So that's where he's trying to get to in the next 2 weeks.
MJ, thanks very much for stopping by. Have a great weekend.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Mike Johnson joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. Guy, it's time to Toyota. Visit MapleToyota.com.